Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed. Up to speed. Positive Nigerian energy, positive Nigerian vibes, positive Nigerian narrative. Because remember, you know that by now, that we are the authentic source of Nigerian information to the diaspora. Alright, time again for us to go on Doctor's Round with Dr. Eiji Afe. Because you know, anytime it's 7 o'clock on a Sunday like this, the Doctor's Round begins. Over to you, Eiji.
Hey, Toye, good evening to you. How are you doing?
Thank you very much. I'm doing fine.
Excellent, excellent. Well, glad to be here again.
Yes. God brought us.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Excellent. Welcome to Doctor's Round. Today again, we're here with all the members of the team, and we're going to be talking about something very important. As usual, we follow our layout. We're going to be I'll be introducing the speaker, and we'll talk about a few questions. And listeners, at any time, you can ask us any question on our topic of discussion today. Of course, LJ Daddy is in the house, and he'll be presenting the case. So what are we going to be talking about today? On Thursday, September 9, 2021, Dr. Afolabi Magbogunje, a 58-year-old information technology consultant, was stabbed while riding his bicycle on the street of Lagos. He later died in a teaching hospital because of inexcusable delays in receiving the treatment that he required. His family concluded, in part, quote, "He battled the robbers, fought for his life. We battled the system and the systemic failures. Everything that could go wrong went wrong." The question is, how do we protect others against these pervasive systemic vulnerability in the healthcare delivery system in Nigeria? Dr. Afolabi required emergency treatment. He was taken to two hospitals. He had the financial and the human resources. He had a supportive network of family and friends. Yet, he died unnecessarily and untimely. To address this sort of patient care safety globally, the WHO in 2019 declared September 17 every year as Patient Safety Day. This coincidentally was marked this year, 8 days before Dr. Magbogunje needlessly lost his life in a system where the safety of care for any patient is seriously compromised. The patient safety campaign is designed to bring global awareness to the public and human rights as they relate to patient safety in healthcare delivery. Although this year, WHO urged all stakeholders to, quote, act now for safe and respectful childbirth, with the theme as safe maternal and newborn care. We will be discussing this on Doctor's Round, and we'll also be touching on areas that relate to patient safety in general. And of course, to do justice to his, is somebody who is well known to regular listeners on this program. And I'm talking about Professor Rotimi Jayesimi, an associate medical director who specializes in patient safety and a consultant obstetrician and gynecologist. He specializes in patient safety and has worked in this field in the UK. He's an adjunct professor of law at University of Ibadan. Professor Jayesimi's interests include consultancy for healthcare system and infrastructures, global health, implementation of science, patient safety, human factor and economics, quality improvement, and of course, OBGY. He also provides expert opinion when it comes to medical negligence. Professor Rotimi Jayesimi, welcome back to Doctor's Round.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you on the World Round.
Thank you very much. Since you appear here, I believe it was in March or May this year, Doctor's Round has changed a bit.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure you've been following us.
Definitely, most definitely.
Good. So one of the changes is that we have LJ Daddy who will be presenting you with a case, and LJ Daddy is always here with us. LJ Daddy, welcome to Doctor's Round.
Hello, sir. Hello, Professor Doctor.
Good evening, LJ Daddy.
Thank you very much, sir. My name is LJ Daddy Lasisi Jacob. Please, Professor, sir, I was getting very angry and they said I should talk to you. Today, Liliana is going to have our twins. And they say it's going to be by Caesar surgery. I'm very happy. The hospital say I have to give blood. I say, ha, to give blood for two twins. I don't have that much blood. They say, no, it's for Liliana. They will test it whether the blood is compatible. I asked, what does compatible mean? They said that the blood is okay for her. I'm wondering why the blood will not be okay for Liliana. If Liliana is going to get blood, she should get my own blood. After all, I'm the one that makes Liliana pregnant. So it must be compatible with me. Then the man is just talking big English. I said, I'm shouting too much. I said, I'm not shouting. I said, I want to be there when I hear about this thing. It's my wife and it's my children. So, Professor Doctor, I'm not shouting, I'm just begging you, please help me. Thank you, sir. Thank you. It's LJ Daddy. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, LJ Daddy, I understand the way you feel. Congratulations on having twins and great expectations. I will try and tell you about the blood that we give to people. Every human being has a different type of blood. You have the O, you have the A, and you have the AB. And when you give blood, you must make sure that the blood you are giving is the same as the one for the person that is receiving it. So for example, if you be A and your wife be AB, there are two different types. So if we give your wife your blood, she will react to it, and it's not very good. It's very, very dangerous. And that is why when you donate blood, it doesn't mean, say, the blood where you give them, now the one them go use for your wife. They will send it to the laboratory, test it. If it's the same as your wife's blood, then they can give your wife the blood. Now, the thing be say, now cesarean section, and even for normal delivery, women will bleed. They will lose blood after childbirth. So at times, even if it's vaginal delivery, some people will require blood. And that is why we always make sure there's blood before we start. Now, with twins, it's even more likely that your wife is likely to lose more blood. And that's why they've said you should go and get blood. So make you no worry, LJ, that I can understand the anxiety and apprehension. But be rest assured that when you donate blood and you bring some family members to give the blood, they will take them to the lab and test well to make sure the one they will give is the same that matches your wife. So they call it a transfusion reaction. So we don't want that one to happen because it's very dangerous. That is the reason. So the doctors will explain to you. I hope what I'm telling you at the moment is a little bit clearer. So be rest assured that what they are trying to do is to make sure that your wife gets the blood that matches her so that she doesn't reject it or react to it. So that one is about the blood transfusion. Now, you say you won't enter theater. Is different in many areas, in many countries, how they do it. Now, if your wife is asleep under anesthesia, the question is, then what will be your role inside theater? You say you want to know which one is Taiwo, which one is Kenhide. The nurses and the doctors have a way of doing that and making sure that as soon as one baby is born, the baby has a label. As soon as the second one is born, the baby has a label. So there will be no mistake as which one is Taiwo, which one is Kenhide. Now, that is why they don't want you to come in, because your wife is asleep and there's nothing you are going to be doing there. And the more people will come inside theater, the risk of infection is higher. So, and you know, we did COVID times. So again, that one, they will take that one into consideration. Now, in some places, if your wife is awake and then they do the operation, say like under what we call epidural, where you're not going to feel the pain for tummy, but it go there awake. For that kind of one, you can come in, sit near your wife, talk to her, hold her hands, but you will not see the operation because there will be like a blanket covering where the operation is taking place. So it depends on what type of anesthesia, and it depends on the policy of the hospital. We have to respect the policy of the hospital. Not every hospital allows people into theater during surgery, more so during COVID times. I hope I don't help you, LJ Daddy.
Thank you very much, Prof. Although LJ Daddy is talking about getting blood and giving blood for his wife, unfortunately, Afolabi's blood came too late because of delay in the system. Afolabi was able to get blood from his friend. He never got the blood because of a failure of a system. You're listening to Doctor's Round on Spirit of Nigeria Radio and our sister radio in Ibadan, Life Radio. Let's go straight to the question here. Prof, what is patient safety in healthcare? What does that really mean?
Well, patient safety, if you look at the words, there are two words, literally. So we have a patient, and the other word is safety. So effectively, what we are trying to say is to keep our patients safe. When we are in medical school, and when we become doctors, we take an oath that says, when you are looking after a patient, first and foremost, make sure you do not cause harm to the patient. So patient safety is ensuring that a patient who is under our care, they trust us because we are skilled people, and they expect that we will treat them well, and complications, errors, problems will not arise that will cause injury to the patient or even death to the patient. So patient safety tries to reduce the risk of these mistakes happening in the healthcare sector.
How is that?
We have a
I just wanted to link that. How is that related to quality of care or quality care?
Quality of care. I mean, they are interrelated, because if you have the knowledge, the skills, and then your performance, then that gives you quality. But that's, again, talking about the individual practitioner. Healthcare is a system. You've got the hospital, you've got the porters, you've got the blood bank, you've got pharmacy, and you can describe hospitals like a high reliability industry, where as human beings, we're prone to errors. And in giving quality care, we must make sure that each part of the system does what it has to do. You mentioned the late Folabi. Now, every hospital ideally should have a blood bank facility. Secondary care, tertiary care. As we say in Nigeria, general hospital is secondary care, or teaching hospital. When you go to primary health care center, you don't expect them to have a blood bank facility. So that is part of providing quality care. Getting it right, getting the patient right, the right time, the right place. For example, if you take a patient to the wrong place, then you've delayed treatment, and that might result in harm.
Right.
If you get the wrong doctor, again, that is wrong. If you dispense the wrong medication, that will cause harm. So it's getting it right at the right place and at the right time. Those are what contributes to quality care.
As you discussed that, are you able to talk about the key elements in quality care? So as a patient, what will I be looking for as key elements?
As a patient, I think what I would turn it around. The question is, how would I want to be treated if I were a patient? Now, quality care is not just about safety. It's, again, about patient experience. You talk about patient safety as well as patient experience. The way I talk to my patients, the way I behave around them, protecting their dignity, the way I talk to them as human beings rather than as just another number, irrespective of care, I mean, irrespective of social class, we must treat our patients with respect and with dignity, irrespective of their level of education. And that is one area. One of the things people say is that the biggest issue we have in healthcare is communication, communicating with our patients. We talk to them the way we want. We don't explain things to them. All of these are part of the quality of care. If I'm going to do an operation on you, I have to let you know what are the alternatives, what are the risks involved, what are the potential outcome of the operation I'm going to do. And I'm not going to tell you in big, big, big English. I have to come to a layperson's level so that you understand what it's all about. Now, again, let's take pharmacy, for example. Yeah. I've done all what I want to do, and I need medication. The pharmacy must be ready. It's not when they say, oh, we need drugs, then they say, oh, we don't have in stock. No. Everything has to be working. The porters, the catering system, you have situation where people come into hospital, they don't get enough food, they are not well hydrated, they lose weight. And because of that, their healing process is delayed. So it's a complex system, but we will get there.
And a situation where you want to transport a patient, an unconscious patient, from one unit of the hospital to another unit of the hospital to take an X-ray and not having an ambulance, which is part of the healthcare delivery system, is a problem.
Yeah, I mean, again, that is one of the things I said, it's a system, it's a complex system. That should be in place. If it's within the same compound, if the X-ray department is, say, a few miles away, depending on how big the hospital is, yes, there must be an ambulance service ready to take that patient to the X-ray center. If it's just a few hundred yards away, the portering service, the couch or the trolley must be available. It's not when you want to send the patient, you say, oh, we haven't got a trolley, oh, let the patient walk or let the patient go on a wheelchair. No, that is not proper care. So it's inexcusable.
Before we go on break, you're a professor of law.
Yes. I'm
specializing in health law.
Yes.
Can you enlighten us on patients' right to a safe care? What are patients' right to a safe care? Is it nicety or is it a right for the patient?
On the legal terms, it is a right. When a patient comes to see a doctor, even though in medical and civil law, we don't call it a contract, it's a duty of care. The very first time a patient comes to see you and says, doctor, these are my complaints, and you as a doctor accept to see that patient, then you owe that patient a duty of care. Now, when you breach that duty of care, then that is where negligence and malpractice comes into the issue. So they have a right to see you, and you must look after them while under your care.
Before you leave that point, can you briefly discuss the safeguards for patient safety? What safeguards are there?
For example, let me take somebody going to theater.
Right.
You send the porter to ward A to go and collect the patient. The porter goes, does not ask for the name of the patient, doesn't ask for the address or the date of birth, and just says, oh, I was told to come out and collect a patient who needs to have surgery. And the nurses also don't ask, what patient were you told to come for? And they just send somebody, and they go to theater. They're received in theater, and no checks are done as to the identity of the patient, what surgery is planned for. Is it the right patient? Is it the right surgery we're planning to do? If you don't do those checks. Now, when you look at pilots, before they take off, they do a lot of checks in the cabin. You know, when we're all bored, the pilots are doing their checks, making sure all equipments are working. It's the same in healthcare. You have to make sure your equipments are working, that you've got the right staff, you've got the right patient. I mean, we've had situations where the wrong patient's been operated upon. Not even just operation. Even when you send patients for investigations. Lest we forget, not every patient that sits before you have good hearing. So when you call Shola Johnson or Shola Mao, if the man is hard of hearing and he sits there, he may think you're calling him and he gets up and you don't check the name properly and then you do the wrong investigations. So, like I said, we need to be very careful in what we do. We cannot stress the importance of being careful when we practice. And I think later on we'll talk about simulation. simulation training, practice drills, so that we get better. Yeah. It's not when we have issues that we now start running around. What do we do? No, with simulation drills, it's you're practicing in event of this kind of situation arising. What would we do? Where would we get the blood? How long will it take us to get the blood? How can we reduce the interval of getting blood? So those are the kind of things that we put in place to make sure that we keep our patients safe.
And even getting the blood, you've got to transport the blood.
That's correct.
At the right time.
At the right temperature.
Exactly, at the right temperature. A situation where in Uganda, in Rwanda, you have drones delivering blood to have a 58-year-old man having the blood donated by his friends and family and not having the blood 2 hours later, according to the newspaper report, is not looking at patient safety. I understand you talk about the very important, subtle aspect of patient care, but where the gross ones are even neglected is a problem. I'm sure we'll talk about this when we come back from break. We're going to take a short musical break, and when we get back, we'll be talking about other areas of patient safety.
Life know the sweet though, eh? If some people know they hate you, so use the number 6 oh, and calculate. You go see the ratio. The beef self na me go, whether na asu them relate to. So bring your own crayfish oh, we go mix oh, oh la. Shana them talk say we no go blow. Now we don't they glow. Take a look at me now. Take a look at me now. We're running things in this town. Can't you see?
I don't care who you are, where you from, what you do. Just as long as you're chasing money, do what's right, never give up on it.
Bring it on, bring it on.
Are you ready? Uno ready?
No matter how you try, don't you ever fall. Keep your head up high and standing tall.
Bring it on, bring it on.
Are you ready? Uno ready?
No matter how you try, don't you ever fall. Keep your head up high and standing tall.
And rising, rising, rising. Keep it high and rising, rising.
This life is not easy. So much hustling and puzzling. Everyone is struggling. So make you know the beliefs. Since everyone is chasing, you're never gonna make it.
Never say no, never give up. Keep your head up, standing tall. And for sure, you go turn it up, turn it up, turn down for what? Hey, Shane and them talk say we no go blow. Now we don't dig low. Take a look at me now. Take a look at me now. We're running things in this town. Can't you see?
I don't care who you are, where you from, what you do. Just as long as you're chasing money, do what's right, never give up on it.
Bring it on, bring it on.
Are you ready?
No matter how you try, don't you ever fall. Keep your head up high and standing
radio,
tall.
Dr. Bring it on,
bring it on.
Okay, so AG, bring it on, bring it on now.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for that, Toye. Welcome back to Doctor's Round, and we're talking about patient safety and how it in general and how it relates to maternal and newborn. Our guest today is Professor Jai Semi, a specialist in patient care and an obstetrician and a gynecologist. Welcome back to Doctor's Round. Before we went on break, you gave us an overview, Prof, of patient safety and the law safeguards. But can you carry on that discussion and walk us through the steps involved in measuring the quality of healthcare?
Right. Thank you for that question. When we measure the quality of healthcare, we talk about key performance indicators. We have guidelines. We have protocols that we do follow. They could be local, made agreed within practitioners within a hospital, or it could be dictated by a specialty like obs and gyne, gynecology or psychiatry, saying this is the standard of practice we expect from you. Or at times it's by the World Health Organization. Now, you now measure your performance against key performance indicators. Let me give an example, perhaps a simple example. When somebody has a road traffic accident, we expect that patient, that person, to be seen and treated within the hour, because we know that's what we call the golden hour. If a paramedic, an ambulance service, arrives at the scene, puts up a drip, and starts stabilizing the patient, they tend to do very well. Thereafter, things start going down and down and down. So if you're going to talk of metrics or outcomes, it will be how long does it take for an ambulance or a paramedic to arrive at the scene of an accident. Again, when you talk about things like how long do you wait in emergency department? In the United Kingdom, no patient is expected to wait in the emergency department for more than 4 hours. Anything outside 4 hours is believed to be poor care. And I'm sure in various places, they have their own standards. So you are measuring your performance against an agreed standard. For example, if you look at maternal mortality, a lot of women still die in childbirth in low-resource countries.
Yeah.
No woman should die in childbirth. In the United Kingdom, very, very few people die in childbirth. And that's because we look at when a woman dies, we look at why they died, we look at ways we can improve things and do a thorough investigation and learn from it and put things in place. So by measuring your performance, you will know how well you're doing. Then you have to use your performance, if you're not doing well, to improve on your services that you give to patients. And again, medical care is not just about blame. Where you do very well, you compliment the team to say, well done, you've done very well. There are so many examples that one can give. Let me give the one of stroke. If somebody has a stroke, from home to get into the hospital and being thrombolized, where you give agents to, I want to use layperson's term, to make sure that the clot dissolves or doesn't form, it has to be within the hour.
Yeah.
Thereafter, the chances of damage increases or the chances of dying also increases. So those are the quality standards. And every specialty has a quality standard that has to be met. And this is one of the things that we should have in Nigeria. I know it exists, but how do we apply it? How do we judge ourselves? How many people produce their data of their performance as a hospital or as an individual doctor? This is one area we have to push for.
Are this performance indicator available somehow to members of the public? Can I, for instance, as a patient in Nigeria, just go on whatever hospital, hospital Y, and find out the performance indicator for treating liver cancer? Are they available?
Well, They're not readily available in Nigeria.
In other places, are they available in other places?
They are available.
Absolutely.
In the Western world, they're available. But I can tell you that things are improving in the private sector in Nigeria. We are getting a few PPP, private-public partnership, well-built to international standards, and they are producing their own data. But patients need to understand that they have a right to ask, what is your complication rate? What is your success rate? If I come under your care, what is your success rate? How well do you do? How do you compare with your peers in the same specialty? So that is very important, that patients have a right to find out the quality of care that's been rendered by that hospital.
Why are they not available for government hospitals? Because if you said that you're going to give me treatment and I know what the measure is, I'll be able to ask questions.
Yes.
Do you have any idea why they're not available in government hospitals?
Because we have a very fragile health system. The Abuja Accord said Nigeria or African countries should devote 15% of their GDP of their budget to healthcare. It was done in Abuja in 2015, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Nigeria struggles to allocate 5% mm-hmm. of its budget
mm-hmm.
To healthcare. So what do you expect when it's not well-funded? That is the problem in the government hospital. It's not well-funded. A lot of the money goes on staff salary, and when it comes to quality of care, it's not. Maintenance culture is poor. The equipments are not there. Doctors and nurses are not being paid. A lot of strike here and there. So the health system is not as at its optimum. And there's room for improvement.
And this is where you coming on this program is very important. Unless we empower the consumer from asking valid questions and making sure that they take legal action against policymaker, against the system, we're going to remain in the same place. That's yes. what it appears. People like LJ Daddy may not have the money to go ahead to a private hospital, the ones we're talking about.
Yes.
But he has a right, as you've indicated, to quality care. But he doesn't know what quality care means. Will you say, as a starter, we should have those even for the government hospitals?
Yes, I think anybody, whether you're government or private care or an individual providing care, you have a duty of care. And when you breach that duty of care, whether due to poor facilities and a patient comes to harm, that patient has a right to go to the law courts. In Nigeria is the Medical and Dental Council of Nigeria that hears things like that and seek for a cost if liability is proven. Now, the issue is that in Nigeria, there's a lot of cultural issues. There's a lot of religious issues, even when things go wrong. Oh, that's the way God wanted it and X, Y, Z. And as professionals, again, there are times, and this is not a general statement, there are very, very good doctors in Nigeria, but there are times where individual doctors and hospitals are not open and transparent and honest about what has gone wrong. They tend to, so we did our best, oh, the patient was meant to die, they came too late. No. If we are not open and transparent, then we're not going to learn. And until, I mean, the lawyers are out there. Medical law is becoming a big thing in Nigeria. And when people start getting sued by patients and their families, and you have to pay out, then I think we will take quality care seriously in Nigeria.
Very interesting. To come back to this point with regards to quality care, patients' right, and how to go about addressing this deficit in healthcare delivery. Help us to understand this. There are certain guidelines that you've talked about, and you measure yourself, and you should be asked questions about how you measure yourself as a healthcare provider on those performance indicators. Is there any adjustment to such? Is there anything as a concept that you patient safety advocates or specialists describe as risk adjustment? Because I want us to be able to clarify that, especially in the light of COVID. Mm-hmm. Can you help us understand the risk adjustment?
Yeah, when you talk about risk adjustment, first of all, is to ensure that you have put in place all that you have to put in place. Healthcare is expensive, very expensive. And because of that, at times you may not have adequate staffing, for example. You may not have the best equipment. And in situations like that, if you don't have adequate staffing level, you may have to shut down your facility temporarily, because coping, having two nurses looking after 30 patients, 30 sick patients, you're not providing safe care. And risk adjustment is to say, sorry, we're understaffed. Could you go to the next hospital where perhaps they are better staffed for the night? That's part of the risk adjustment. There are things that need to be done. For example, I don't like what we call risk register, or there's something going wrong in the system, or put it on the risk register. No. I visited a car factory, assembly plant, Nissan to be exact, and I said, when things go wrong during your production line, do you have a risk register where you say, oh, we haven't got that screw, put it on the, we'll buy one in six months' time? No, they said, no. If things go wrong, we fix it then. That's what should happen in healthcare. That is what we should be promoting in healthcare. Funding healthcare is very, very important. Making sure that our doctors, our nurses, our pharmacists, occupational health therapists are well-trained, up-to-date, continuous professional development. Very important. And as a patient, if you have doubts about what you're being told, you're not certain, you're not convinced what your practitioner is telling you, you have a right to say, could I have a second opinion? Could I have a second opinion within the hospital? Can I see another of your colleagues? Or could you refer me to another hospital? Not that I don't believe what you're saying, but I would like to reflect, think about it, seek other people's view before coming to a conclusion. More so if it's not an emergency. In emergency, you don't have that, you don't have the gift of time when it comes to an emergency. But if it's an elective, chronic situation, then you can always seek for a second opinion.
You're listening to Doctor's Round on Life Radio and Spirit of Nigerian Radio, and we're discussing patient safety. And our guest today is Professor Jayesley. Prof, I want you to carry that discussion forward, this idea of seeking second opinion. In a society like ours, where mishaps are always, especially in acute phases, we think mishaps are supernatural, it's God, it's Ifa, it's whatever that brought it on, it's the will of God. Who should a patient be approaching when it comes to the quality of care? The friends, the family, and who should be advocating for them?
Well, I mean, it's multi-sourced. I as a patient, or anyone as a patient, you have a voice and you can use your voice. You have a right and you can use your right. There's the United Nations human rights that you can apply. There's the code of ethics of the Medical and Dental Council that you can apply. But if you don't want to do that, your family are also advocates. In Nigeria at the moment, people are reluctant to have family involved in discussions. When I say people, healthcare professionals, who are you to tell us? What's your business? You're not my patient, so why are you asking me questions? No, they have a right to act as long as the patient has given permission to, for them to speak on their behalf. They have a right to do that. And the third sector is advocacy groups. And increasingly, we're now getting that in Nigeria. You've got things like the Asthma Foundation, the Heart Foundation, Sickle Cell Foundation, My Gynae Issues Foundation, and they act as the voice of the patients. They question doctors. They ask questions on because, again, the literacy level at times is not there. So the patient doesn't even know what to ask, what to say. Or even if you are literate, because you are in an emotional state, you just don't even know what to say. But I would advise that when you're going to see a doctor, take somebody with you. Because as we say in Nigeria, when things go in from the into the right ear, it goes out to the left ear. And that's why we encourage patients to bring somebody along with them when they are coming to hospital, because that person can listen and explain to patient. So patient advocacy is very important. And there's no reason why we as healthcare professionals shouldn't be the advocate for good care for our patients. We should be advocates. But where we fail, where we fall short of it, then friends and family, and I'll talk to you about friends and family shortly, then the non-governmental advocacy groups. In the United Kingdom, we have something we call the friends and family test. And that is, will you recommend this hospital to your friends and family? If I have received a shoddy, bad treatment from you, I will not recommend your services to my family or to my friends. And we do it, we give it to every patient. Tell us how, we were talking about quality metrics or outcome metrics. That is part of what the measurements. When a patient is going home, we give them a leaflet. How well have we done? Will you recommend us to your friends and family? If we've done poorly, they will say it, that we've done poorly.
I have a question here. Sorry to interrupt you, Prof. This is a question for message. Can I get a second opinion from the internet or Google? There's so much on internet that is confusing, but can I get an opinion and go to my doctor and say, hey, this is what's going on? What do you say to that?
Yes, there's a lot on the internet. Some are well-written and authoritative, but again, you can find a lot of trash on the internet. So you've got to be careful where you get your information from. Look at the source. When you see things like Mayo Clinic or Dr. Hamed as a consultant psychiatrist, then you know that that's a good source. But be careful what you read. But by and large, you will, when you look at the source and you read what's been written, then yeah, the internet is a good source. Let me give you an example. As a gynecologist, I have a lot of patients being referred to me for pelvic pain and pain during intercourse. And when I ask them that, tell me about your bowels, they say, oh, I've got constipation, I've got diarrhea. And I say, you've got irritable bowel syndrome. And I show them, I turn my screen and show them, I Google it, painful intercourse, irritable bowel syndrome, and they see it. So the Google is a rich source of material. And nowadays, even patients know more than some of us because they've gone, they've done their research, they've read, they know the new things. And we as doctors should be able to swallow our pride when a patient comes to us with information. So yes, you can get a second opinion from Google, but make sure it's a good site you've got that information from.
Just like yourself, I tell my patient, when I want to change them from one medication to the other, I tell them to read about it before they come to see me. Very important. And I help them to correct that information. Remember, an educated patient population is a population that helps you to have better doctors.
That's correct.
Better doctors increase the quality of care that we receive. We were talking about this, the idea of second opinion and so on. Is there a place for independent health advocacy company? Do you think there's a place for that? Where I, as a patient, I can pay and say, hey, you take care of my, because I know during the emergency, emotionally, I'm torn apart. I don't want to do this. It's a form of Ulysses contract. You take care of it. What do you think?
Well, do you know what COVID has taught us?
Mm-hmm.
COVID has shown us that with telemedicine,
Hello, Prof, are you there? Is that me or you?
All right, looks like Prof is frozen.
Okay.
Looks like it's frozen. I'm sure you can go
ahead. Okay. Well, Prof will join us soon. But what he was saying was that with COVID, we know that the world is a smaller village where you can get opinion from other practitioners that can help you make decision. It's not just going on the internet to get the information, but you can always seek opinion. And in my opinion, I don't know what Prof would say, having a company that will help to advocate for you in terms of stresses may be a way to go. You're listening to Doctor's Round on Spirit of Nigeria Radio and live radio in Ibadan. I guess if Prof does not join us, we're coming very closely to the end of the program. One of the things that I'm sure Prof will have added is the value of patient satisfaction survey. He touched on it briefly. It is very important that we have a satisfaction survey, and Prof is joining us now. So to tell others how you felt about the service you received, and that will help to improve the quality of care. And that brings us to the end of today's round. Oh, Prof has just joined us. I hope I can get him in now to just say his goodbyes. Hi, Prof, are you there?
Hello there.
Yes, sorry about that. We internet radio, and I was just saying goodbye to the listeners on your behalf. And thank you again for coming in today, unless you have one or two sentences to say in 2 seconds. I can see Tony giving me a wave.
Yes, one or two sentences. We as doctors should make sure that we treat our patients with respect and professionally. As patients, we should, again, present ourselves early and have our voice. We shouldn't just accept shoddy care as an act of God. It's a partnership between the doctors, nurses, and the patient. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming again on Doctor's Round. And you bet we'll be getting back. We'll be inviting you back. It's always a pleasure.
It's a pleasure to be with you. Yes, thank you.
Yes, so I'd like to thank everybody that has made today's program possible. The crew in Lagos, thank you very much. The listeners and those who sent questions, we didn't get to some of your questions, we address them. And to every other person that made it possible, that was Doctor's Run. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.